Hello, and good day, everyone. It's Kevin Finkel here. I'm your host of Magic, the First Pioneers. This is a podcast all about the Pioneer format, and we keep our listeners up to date with what is new, interesting, and powerful in the world of Pioneer. I'm joined by my co-host, as well as a recurring guest.
My name is Ryan Schwenk. I'm the Japan hobbyist out of the Tokyo area of Japan. And our guest?
Hi there. I'm Harry13, a regular guest to the podcast, and also a regular grinder on MTGO. I tend to have my ear to the ground when it comes to anything related to Pioneer.
And that's really what we have you on the show for, is that we want that, you know, real in the dirt, playing every day Pioneer experience of what's going on in competitive. So especially when we're doing this kind of episode where we want to look at what's really going on in the format, you know, looking for, we're aiming this episode towards grinders, towards people who are playing a lot, or anyone who just, you know, likes to follow the scene, know what's coming up. Those are kind of who we're focusing on this week. So we're going to be talking about what's in the meta. We're going to be talking a little bit about what's up and down, as well as kind of going back over the impact of the recent bans, because we haven't had a full meta breakdown since that episode.
Yeah, I mean, this is actually kind of my choice for once. I mean, usually it's Kevin that wants to talk about the metagame, but I've been seeing a lot of new content out there, and I believe last time we talked about the metagame, you know, post-bannings, Kevin was like, yeah, everyone's playing, and there's just so much more excitement about Pioneer now. And after reading a couple recent articles, I've been seeing stuff showing up that I had no idea even existed in Pioneer, because I haven't been playing competitive. So I really wanted to kind of, how could I say, pick your brain today about, you know, the metagame in Pioneer.
Yeah, that sounds good. I'm looking forward to this.
So we've got you'll be asking a lot of questions. We're going to be turning to Harry for a lot of expertise. I'll kind of be in the middle of there. I'm kind of about a week behind, I think, on Pioneer news. It's been a crazy couple of weeks here for me, so I'm haven't been playing much, but I've still been, you know, following any big news, any big decks coming out. It's maybe just the percentages and things, you know, what is top of meta that I'm really going to need some help with.
So if you guys don't mind me getting started, my first question is, what were we right and wrong about in our post-banning episode? So I don't know if you have your notes, but I'm looking back at my notes, and I think we kind of made some predictions as to, like, what decks we thought were going to be big. For example, I think we all kind of talked about Mono Green getting better, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Mono Green was the deck to beat, and I think we expected this coming. You know, when they unbanned Wolfenisa, we could see something really powerful happening with Mono Green. You know, it's almost like, I think it's been nicknamed the Yahtzee deck, and this kind of reminds me, from personal experience, of Abzan Midrange and Cans of Tarkir Standard, where there were certain draws that it had that were just unbeatable. Like, I think in that standard, it was like the one mana knight that could essentially evolve into,
yeah. So Warden of the First Tree, and then what, evolve and then Anafenza.
It was Warden of the First Tree. It was the Fleecemane Lion, Anafenza or Abzan Charm into Siege Rhino into Wingmaker, and that in that format, that draw was just so difficult to beat. Like, if they had that draw, it was just insane. And it was similar to Mono Green. Like, if they have the, you know, turn one Mana Dark, turn two Burning Tree Emissary into, you know, either like another Mana Dark or another Burning Tree into something, and then they play, you know, Nykthos into a Planeswalker or something, like, these kind of draws are very difficult to interact with for the most part. The major downfall with Mono Green was that Inverter was just so good at just picking it apart, and then just, but by the time they stabilized, you just had the combo there, you know, the fast combo to win. But once Othanisa was unbanned, you could see the decks starting to have, you know, better top decks in the mid to late game. and just, you know.
So when you called it Yahtzee, you're talking about it being a game of luck, of kind of putting together, you know, I've got this piece and this piece and this piece, and that wins the game?
Kind of. It has the most explosive draw in the format, which I think is very hard to beat unless you have turn one or two interaction followed by turn three and four interaction. You know, you have to be able, with its most explosive draws, you have to be able to, you know, your draws have to line up perfectly to interact with it, otherwise you're almost certainly going to lose. And this is why, like, I thought blue-white control would have been better than it actually turned out to be. The main issue I had with that deck was that it just doesn't have Fatal Push. It doesn't have, you know, the interaction it has in the early games is just not good enough against decks that, like, mono-green, where they can attack you from so many different axes. And I think that's the main point about this metagame, is that you have to have more than one axis of attack. The only deck that's the real exception to that is probably Naya Winota, where, again, it has a very explosive, potential explosive draw. However, I still don't think it's as explosive as mono green, and that's the major difference there, is why I think mono green is one of the best decks in the format, and why I think Naya Winota is arguably tier 1, probably tier 1.5.
And I was going to say, so I think we were right about the mono-green decks being really good. But I think we didn't really give a lot of credit to the Elder Gargaroth. We didn't think that that was going to be as good as it was, or as it has become. Would you say that that was kind of one of the things we were wrong about?
Yes, I would say,
you know,
so.
Six, I think six. Part of that's, you know, it got better with without combo in the format, you know, playing a 5-drop. It's not really still, you know, I've seen it as a sideboard card in a lot of places, and I think that the, you know, Mono Green can wish for it if they've got Nissa. I don't think that it's taking up a huge, you know, role player for the deck. It's just another option of something possible.
It's just a Bane. It's essentially a Baneslayer Angel, but I think calling it a Baneslayer Angel is a bit of a disservice, whereas Baneslayer Angel...
It's a Baneslayer and a Thragtusk, right?
No, because it doesn't...
Well, no, Thragtusk had guaranteed
value.
Yeah,
that's the issue. Is Baneslayer Angel, in terms of, you know, it doesn't immediately come into play with a ETB effect, you know, but against certain matchups, if you get to hit once with it, you're probably going to win the game. But with Baneslayer Angel, you were never really necessarily going to guarantee winning the game with the first hit. It's normally like if it stays on board for two turns. However, Elder Gargaroth, I feel more often than not, if it can stay on the battlefield for one turn, it's normally good enough when it gets the first attack in or the first block in. I still think Elder Gargaroth is... I don't think it's, you know, stellar. I think it's a good 5-drop, but in the same way that I find Scarab God tends to be in certain matchups, where, yeah, if you untap with it, there's a high chance you'll probably win the game, but I still think sometimes it can be a little too slow. However, yes, I didn't think that card would have been anything more than a one of or two of in a sideboard. I didn't expect it to be, you know, potentially a four of in a 60, in the main 60. So yeah, that card has impressed me and surprised me.
Oh, so they are main decking that now?
Yes, they're main decking it.
Okay.
It just gives them another... It's just one of those cards, like...
Another win card.
Yeah, I mean, if you have a Baneslayer Angel in green, that's just more upside, right? Because your green cards don't always gain you life, and, you know, when they do gain you life, they tend to not be that good otherwise. Whereas this card is very good. Gives you another axis against archetypes you might have previously been, you know, weak to. So... Yeah, I like Elder Gargaroth a lot. I think it's, you know, post 2018, 2019, I think it's perfectly well-designed Magic card, which I rarely say these days, you know.
Yeah, and I think part of that is it's pretty specific size, does good against a lot of the things in the format. You know, it can block a Niv-Mizzet, it can block an Uro.
Yeah.
It can, you know, it blocks Yargle, or not Yargle. thinking of this week. The flyer from Mono Black is a really important one that it can block.
Yeah. Yeah, I just think it's just a really well designed Magic card. It's kind of like, it reminds me of Tyler's Tracker in the sense of a card that's powerful but not busted. I remember in Standard when Tyler's Tracker was legal, people were complaining about it, but I generally just thought that card was really well designed. And I feel like Elder Gargaroth gives me the same kind of feeling where it's a snowball card. It doesn't really immediately impact the board, but if you leave it on the battlefield for one turn, two turns max, you're going to lose the game slowly but surely. But I don't think it's...
And that's kind of the whole shtick of the mono green deck, is that you have to answer Karn right away or it'll be value. You have to answer Vivian right away or every turn you're getting value. Nissa's making a land every turn, yeah. So it taxes the same resource that those
exactly
are.
Exactly. And that's, and Karn just gives it that extra edge. Like I've said, you know, a couple of times already, it just gives you so many potential like access to win the game, and it fits in perfectly to the mono green deck, because the mono green deck has the same game plan for almost every, against every matchup, is ramp up, slam planeswalker, ramp up, slam planeswalker, because it essentially...
So is mono green what you've been playing? You know, I know when we had you on the show back in the day, you were a big blueback inverter fan, you know, kind of playing the best deck in the format. Is this your best deck right now?
I've not been playing it personally. As much as I like to think I'm a spike, I still have certain preferences for archetypes. I think I'm going to play it depending on how it does this weekend. Predominantly, I've been playing... I got a couple of trophies with... Team of Reclamation. I got a trophy with Bant Control, and I got a trophy with this deck I've been working on with an Israeli player known as Ekaros MTG. Him and I get on very well, and we've been trying out Sultai Control based on our thoughts on how we want to attack the meta.
So I think that we kind of talked a little bit about Bant's last time. Like, maybe I was talking about Bant's approach, I think. Is that kind of like the build you're running?
Not necessarily Bant's approach. No, don't get me wrong. I love approach from the Second Sun. However, I feel like the best configuration of Bant is Yorion. And because of that, you need to focus on more ETB effects, and I would only ever play approaches maybe a one of or two of, and I think with an 80 card deck it becomes a lot less reliable, because you're also not running Dig Through Time in this version, because Euro takes up so much of your graveyard resources. So the reason why I liked the Bant deck is because I like blue white in terms of the counter spells, and I like having access to both Teferi, Narset. I think Elder Conqueror's deck is very good. Uro is obviously very powerful, probably like the best card in Magic that's still legal in the more recent formats. However, with blue-white, I felt like you could never keep up with the explosive starts from some of the decks, because you don't have that turn one interaction like Fatal Push or Thoughtseize. So the way to counteract that was running, you know, four Uro and four Growth Spiral. So, you know, okay, you may not be able to deal with the first barrage that your opponents deal to you. However, Growth Spiral and Uro can buffer your life and ramp you into Supreme Verdicts plus Counterspell and stuff like that. So that's why I decided to try this out. It was also configured by Canister, who's obviously one of the best Magic players in the world. So I just kind of copied and pasted his list and tried to work out what was going on. Interestingly enough, he played a copy of Ugin. I really like Ugin right now. I'm trying it out in my Sultai Control deck because, like I said, decks are trying to attack you from different axes. You know, Planeswalkers, creatures, like, it's never just, you know, a creature-based deck or a Planeswalker-based deck. You tend to have both, sometimes enchantments, and I feel like Ugin has won me so many games where, you know, you just reset the board and hand it over to your opponent and come back from that. And the exile effect on Ugin is obviously very good. So,
Yeah, I'm kind of surprised. I mean, it sounds like, I mean, I think I said that like blue black control I thought was going to get better, or like Esper or whatnot. So I was kind of wrong about that, and I'm surprised that Bant's doing so well.
Well, the main issue I have with both of these, Esper has been doing well as well. I've seen a lot of people playing an Esper Yorion strategy, but also playing Yorions in the main. The main issue I have with these decks is going to be the mana base. Esper, Grixis, and they all need a Triome. I feel like not having a Triome is such a big issue. When I played Esper, I felt like once my mana base cooperated, I was winning games. It was so good. I could outgrind Agent of Treachery from Lucca, from the Lucca Fires deck. I could outgrind pretty much anything once I got my first two to three turns going, no problem, and was able to use my early interaction. But I would never 5-0 with the deck because at least one match I would lose because of my mana base. Like I would mulligan to five, keep a two lander, not hit the third land, and I had less issues with that with Bant because you're only splashing green for Growth Spiral and Uro, so you can function very well on two colors, the blue white colors. However, in Esper, you needed to distribute the colors between Fatal Push Lotis, but also having the mana for Supreme Verdict and like Narset, Teferi. So I felt like because the mana was so demanding, it was the colors were so demanding on the mana base that I just felt like it was too inconsistent. But if we get Triomes, then maybe in a Pioneer Master set, I would love to see them print Triomes in some sort of Pioneer Master set because that would make the decks better.
You mean just to get the price down to make it a little bit cheaper?
Well, yeah, but also just to provide stuff like I think Triomes in every shard would be fair and
Okay, yeah,
balanced.
'cause like we don't have Naya yet and stuff like that, right?
Exactly. So I feel like that needs to be they need to be printed for these shards, the kind of ladder shards to be as competitive as their Cannes counterparts.
Yeah. That's my biggest thing with like Pioneer right now. I'm just so pissed off at the mana base. You know, we don't have the what was it, the friendly pain lands yet. We don't have the fast lands yet, you know, that were in what was it, Scars of Mirrodin. We don't have these triumphs, we don't have all the other cycling lands. It is very frustrating.
Yeah, I think it's a balance, right? Because you want to differentiate the format from modern, from legacy, etc. But as much as I agree with that, I think from that point on, you need to balance every kind of color combination. And the fact that, Cannes shards have a distinct advantage over their Alara counterparts because they have like far superior mana base.
More synergies.
Yeah, well, it's just the mana base cooperates so much better, and I feel like I really would like them to balance that out so that you could play any shard. The mana base doesn't have to be perfect for all of them, but it just has to be evenly distributed. Like I'm not asking for fetch lands to be legal in Pioneer because they don't want them to be, and that's fair enough because it allows us to play more powerful spells like Dig for Time, which I really enjoy. But I'd at least like there to be an even keel on what color combinations you can play.
Were there any other decks that you guys wanted to talk about that you kind of predicted last time and, you know, they either you were correct or incorrect about?
Yeah, I think.
Well, I think a couple of the meta, yeah, I was gonna say like a couple of our kind of broader ones, like I was saying, hey, I don't think mid-range is going to come back. I think things like Niv, things like Lucca are still going to be way too over the top for that. Mono green planeswalkers even. So I'm a little surprised that more aggro didn't make its way in. You know, we were hoping for,
Winota
well, I
was
guess,
one, I
we were
think,
saying we were
right?
hoping for something like a Collected Company deck to show up, and we kind of did get that with the Jund deck. So that's probably actually a good thing we called, is that, you know, that kind of deck now makes a little more sense when you don't have to have early removal and hate.
Yeah, I
Is
agree.
Niv-Mizzet a thing though? Is I know at the start it was kind of strong, but is it still doing well?
I think it's definitely doing well than it was post Theros. I remember Niv-Mizzet was very good towards the end of last year, and then it was good the first month of Theros before people started to figure out that Invertedris was really busted, and once the meta started to warp around Breach and Inverter, Niv-Mizzet just kind of disappeared. It kind of slowly made a return, but it was always kind of tier two. Gab Nassif was, regularly trying to force it, but I don't think he was having major success with it. And given how good a player Gab Nassif is, that's when it's more likely that the deck choice just wasn't the best one. I think now it's definitely better than what it was at that point in time. And I think a lot, there's the trophy leader in Pioneer on MTGO is like way ahead of everyone else. They're on like 28 trophies and they play exclusively Niv-Mizzet. And there's another player called Japanese Fisherman who's kind of similar to me on about 13 trophies with it. So it's definitely, the deck's definitely good. However, I don't think it's probably tier one at the moment, I'd say. But I don't think it's the best deck in the format. But the good thing about it is it can adapt very well if it's trying to target a specific matchup. It has a lot of, obviously it's five colors, so it has like so many tools at its disposal. So I think it's always going to be there, especially right now.
Yeah, that is something I was seeing when I was researching for this episode, is that, I was seeing some very interesting versions of Niv to Light, and some of them were really focusing on certain matchups. I saw ones that were made just to beat the mirror match even. And it seems like now they've kind of gone back to the generic, a lot of just clean answers that answer everything. So maybe that's just, things are changing a little bit right the second. So it's got to go back into defensive mode. And then once it figures out whatever the best deck is, you can more target that.
Yeah, and I think one of the most difficult things with Niv-Mizzet, if you're trying to grind or if you're trying to do well in a big tournament, is the deck configuration. It's so difficult to consistently be on the pulse. Like, I know there's definitely a Niv-Mizzet Discord group, like that Claudio, who the trophy leader is, will be on. I would play it because I know for a fact that I'm not going to configure it optimally for any given weekend. As much as I, have faith in my own deck building capabilities, I don't think I would need a network of people to, tune into for me to feel comfortable registering a Niv-Mizzet list in any given weekend, because if you get it perfect and right, then you're going to have a really powerful deck that could, take down any tournament. The biggest difficulty is getting that list right,
One more thing I wanted to talk about before we moved on to our next topic. So we did talk a little bit about Winota decks. We thought those were going to be really good after this, after the bannings. But have they actually put up any good numbers since the bannings?
I'm not too sure. I don't think so. And like I said before, I think the main reason is it's just a less explosive green deck. And it only kind of fights from one angle. I know post-board they tried to bring in cards like Chandra's Tortured Defiance. And again, if they have their extremely explosive draws, they're probably going to win most games. But the issue for me is that it's not quite consistent enough. And I think if I wanted to play a deck with one game plan and a very explosive, have access to explosive draws, I would just play mono green. I think it's just strictly worse than mono green for what it's trying to do. Don't get me wrong, it's still a good deck. I definitely think it's tier 1.5, and there will be times where it will be tier one, but I just think it just suffers from that. What it's trying to do is not the best thing that can do that in the format, if you know what I mean. So yeah, I think if I wanted to play that explosive, powerful deck, I would play mono green over Naya Winota. And it's also just harder, the mana base is Naya, so it's naturally going to be very difficult to get right consistently. It has to play cards like Mana Confluence, which it's a great card, but it has its obvious downsides.
It's one of those decks that's gonna suffer as long as we have a bad mana base.
Yeah, definitely. I think like if they fix the mana base up a bit, I think potentially it could be the best deck in the format. It never was the best deck in the format, and
It was a good
it
deck.
was a good deck. It definitely was. Like when it first came out after Cordia was spoiled, it turned a lot of heads, turned our heads. I think, as I said, I think it's a good deck, although is it tier one? I've yet to be convinced.
Yeah. All right. So,
well, so we did just get, well, we are getting the pathways, which should be both the allied colors for that deck, right?
What are the pathways? Are those the new cards in Zendikar?
Yeah, so, yeah, I mean, we're not going over the new cards, how they're going to impact everything yet, but as far as the winners and losers, that is a deck that, you know, we're not getting all of the pathways, but we are getting red, green, and green, white, I believe.
Okay. I haven't seen those yet.
Oh, okay. You gotta...
I gotta check those out.
Yeah, really.
I haven't heard of those. Yeah. No, but if you guys don't mind, I want to talk about the new decks in this season. Decks that we had no idea were even on the radar that have shown up. Is that okay?
Yeah, let's do it.
Yeah.
So I want to start with Harry 13's Timur Reclamation deck.
Yeah.
So you still with us?
Yeah.
Can you tell us a little about it? Why did this deck get good? Why wasn't it available? Or sorry, why didn't it put up numbers before this?
Basically, combo was always a turn or two faster than you. The deck was my friend Eli Milan, who is an Italian Magic player. We were trying it out before the band, and we saw a lot of potential in it. We felt like it had potential to be a good deck, but we knew it was never going to be tier one given the combo nature, and I feel like the main issue with it at the time was Lotus Breach would just destroy you. Inverter was a hard matchup because they had access to Thoughtseize, so they could basically tear anything that they cared about, like Explosion, out of your deck and out of your hand, and then just you couldn't really interact well with the combo. Also, there was just not enough people working on the archetype in Pioneer to configure an optimal list. So I think it's one of these decks where everyone is trying to play mid-range. There's nothing going to be more powerful. There's going to be nothing more powerful in a mid-range battle than, you know, exploding for six, for, you know, killing a creature or planeswalker, drawing six cards. Wilderness Reclamation is obviously a busted Magic card. And
I was going to say, did this deck come from Historic or did it come from Modern? Someone said Modern, I think, in an article I read, but I was playing against this like for an entire season in Historic.
Yeah. So
where did this come from?
I think it came from Historic because they still had access to Nexus of Fate, but I think a lot of once you played Pioneer for a while, you realize that you realize how heavily the format is warped around the cards printed over the last 2 years. Like, of course, like all formats. Yeah, exactly. And that's the major difference is the major difference is that Shark Typhoon was printed in Ikoria, so that's what cemented it. Because for me, the reason why I wanted to play it is because it had three distinct win cons. It had Uro, it had Explosion, and it had Shark Typhoon. Neither one of these win cons depend on the other. Whereas, you know, Sultai Delirium heavily depends on the graveyard. No, you only have, if you take out the graveyard, you've only taken out the Uro access of the deck. You still have to deal with the Explosion. You still have to deal with Shark Typhoon. Mm-hmm. If you take out Explosion, I'm still going to win with Shark Typhoon or Uro. Very hard to, and, you know, post board, it's when people bring an enchantment removal or anything like that, I don't care. I can play a mid-range deck. I can play a mid-range strategy so well with this deck. And the reason why I didn't see as much play beforehand, as I said, is combo, and there's just better, more powerful things going on in the format. Like, Explosion's not as powerful as a two card combo. You know, it's just not as good. But now that those style of strategies are no longer in the format, loading face or grinding your opponent out with Uro or just casting massive sharks is a good way to win games of Magic. And you can, you know, now that combo isn't here, you can tune your sideboard and your main 60 to battle a, you know, more predictable metagame. So yeah, the deck really came as a surprise to me as well. I think it took like a couple of weeks before people started to realize, you know what, We should just be playing the best deck in Standard and Pioneer, because sometimes that is good enough. Akoria for me was the main reason that made me look towards Team of Reclamation and Shark Pippin, because the deck really struggled to deal with Teferi Time Ravelers and Narsets prior to the printing of Shark Typhoon. And it still does, don't get me wrong, like, you still just lose games to a Narset, or you just lose games to Teferi because you cannot interact with it in any meaningful way. But you have more tools at your disposal to do that now than you did before.
The next deck I wanted to talk about, if you don't mind me taking the next choice, Kevin.
No, go right ahead.
I sent you guys some links before the show, some articles people have been writing and saying what decks are kind of good right now. I think we've talked about the Luka decks in the past, about how we thought it was like it was almost good, but it was still kind of too early to tell. There's two decks, not Luka decks, but there's two decks that are running Fires of Invention, which was actually kind of another card that I think we said had a lot of potential in Pioneer. So Jeskai Luka is one of them, and the other one is actually a Mardu Fires deck. So which one of these would you guys say is better? Are they both, playable? Are they both competitive? Like, I'd like to hear your take on that, Martin.
So
what's your opinion of the Fires of Invention decks in Pioneer currently?
So I had a look at the Mardu Fires deck. I've not played against that once. I played against Luka Fires a lot. I think they're both good. They're both strong. Luka into Agent is a very powerful strategy. I'm just not convinced, personally. I feel like a lot of the times I've played against Agent decks, had two permanents taken off me and still managed to win. I think Fires is a great card. However, I'm not sure if the optimum build has been figured out yet. And I don't know if Fires is perhaps just worse than Wilderness Reclamation. The fact that you can't interact in your opponent's turn and cast instants essentially once you've resolved it is a big, downside for me. However, the colours have access to really powerful cards. And look, the Planeswalkers are great. I think the deck is definitely tier one, the Luka deck. However, I think
it hasn't found its optimal build yet.
Yeah, and it's easier to exploit. I think if the format was more aggro-centric, it would be a great choice. However, the fact that the format is very much, trying to attack from a bunch of different axes and is very much mid-range or very, very explosive, I feel like maybe it's not well-positioned. But I think the deck on raw power level is very good. The Mardu deck, I honestly looked at it. It looks powerful. I would need to play against it to give you a true personal analysis for that deck. Mm-hmm. So at the moment, I'm going to go with Luka Fires, but I could be proven wrong. Hopefully not during the challenge, and I get totally blown out by the deck. But yeah, they both look very strong.
I'm just really happy that Mardu's finally getting some love.
I think so as well.
I'm definitely a Mardu player.
Yeah.
What were you saying?
Yeah, I agree. I'm glad. I haven't seen Mardu as an archetype turn up in so long, apart from when I randomly get blown out by it on Arena when I'm trying to grind gold so I can have enough to draft when the new set comes out.
Alright, so next deck I wanted to kind of ask you about was the Rakdos Lurrus decks. So I think this is another one that kind of came from Historic. I'm not quite sure, but would you care to comment?
This was kind of seeing play as, there were a few decks trying this, and I almost want to lump this. It's not quite fair to lump this in with Pyromancer, but it's kind of the
Pyromancer
plus, Pyromancer plus Kroxa decks have kind of been a thing. We had Jund for a while because it was good ways to trigger it in green. We've gotten better ways since then to do it in other colors.
Was that in Modern, or was that in...
Oh, that was in Pioneer.
Really?
I was saying it's not... I don't feel like it's that new.
Okay. It seems new to me. It seems more like it's... It seems closer to the original Mardu Pyromancer in... what was I going to say? In and modern than it does to like its own archetype. Like put stuff in the graveyard and then
it's
make
more,
your Dreadhorde Arcanist stronger and then flash it back.
It's definitely more and it's controlling. Using,
I mean, I really like the use of, what was it, the Claim to Fame that people are playing now.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
That's sweet.
Yeah, that's one of my favorite cards.
That card is finally playable in a deck. That was one of those cards that people thought was going to be a complete and utter breakout card. I remember so many people saying, I'm going to buy foil copies for my modern Death Shadows deck, and it just never saw play. I'm glad it's seen play. It was such a card, and it was one of those cards that I really thought would see a lot more play than it did. I think the deck's very good. It has the same kind of idea in terms of what I want to be doing in Pioneer. It's very hard to attack from any specific angle because it has a go wide strategy, it has a control element to it, it has graveyard synergy. It's very hard to attack. The same way, like I said, with Inverter, I think this deck is the real deal. It's going to be one of the top three decks in the format. Might be the best this weekend. You know, it's I think if you're prepared for it, you can handle it. And I actually think Team of Reclamation might have a good matchup against it, given the fact that you've got a lot of strong top decks in the mid game. Uro being one of them, but Uro's just great whenever you want it, like turn 10, turn 3, that's why it probably should get banned. But that might be for another episode.
So you did just touch on one of the questions I really wanted to ask about this is, do you feel that the red-black pyromancer, the red-black Loras decks, are they hateable? Like if you just got, enough graveyard hate, does that stop the deck? Or is it archetypal? Like you have to be a well-designed matchup in other ways.
I think it's archetypal. I think you need to just go over the top. And I think that's why Team of Reclamation might be good against it. Similar, it's got kind of similar to Mono Black in that sense, where it just has a lot of different angles. It just slowly grinds your cards away, and it gains so much value out of, like, you know, with Mono Black, it gains a lot of value out of its lands, where this deck, it gains a lot of value out of graveyard recursion, and like it has a go wide strategy, so it's targeted, like with Mono Black, like targeted removal spells tend not to be that effective against it. You probably just want to play cards like Kalitas if you're playing black, like Kalitas, or cards that completely ignore the board, like Elder Gargaroth might be good in that matchup. I haven't really looked at a lot of its removal suite, but I imagine it's more focused on the fatal push aspect.
Stuff that they can get played again by with Dreadhorde Arcanist.
Yeah. So cards like
two or three at the most.
Yeah, cards like Uro are obviously going to be very good over the long game. Cards like Thoughtseize are probably going to be bad because obviously pretty much all their cards are recursive from the graveyard. You know, they've got ways to bring them back. I think that's what makes decks like Mono Black aggro and decks like this good is, and Wilderness Reclamation decks good, is that you can't really target specific things about the deck. You just need to have a game plan and decide how you're going to win, and then for the most part it's going to be for just managing the board, but also being able to recur your cards from the loss of card advantage from the early game. So this Sultai control deck we're working on has elements of that we can use, like Hydroid Creators, Ugin, Uro, cards like that. You kind of want to just gain back the cards you lost in the early game, in the mid to late game, and not die, don't die damage or whatever your life total is.
So, I don't know if there's anything else you wanted to say about that, but I wanted to jump into the next archetype that I'm wondering about, and again, get your opinion on it. The Citadel decks, the Bolas Citadel decks, how have those been doing? I've noticed some people have been playing like the green-black version a lot, and some people have more of like the Mayhem Devil Jund Sacrifice version. Are those good decks in Pioneer now?
I remember the first time.
Ooh, I'm trying to remember exactly. Someone had a quote. I want to say it was like, if they knew that they would never face aggro, the green-black version would be much better, but you just need those Mayhem Devils to be able to ping. It was either, you know, maybe it was mono-green. Maybe they were worried about the hitting the mono-dorks. But there was a couple decks where having Mayhem Devil is the entire matchup, and that's really the difference between the two of those. I'll see if I can find that quote, because I feel like someone more relevant than me said it.
I remember the first time I played against the deck, and it was against LSV, and I was pretty sure he was still going to be on blue-white control, because that's the deck I've seen him play last. And I cannot even remember what I was playing. It might have been a control, it probably was a control deck. I'm trying to work out if it was Bant or blue-white or Sultai, or I think it might have been blue-black, actually. I was trying out blue-black with Jace Wielder, and when he resolved Bolas's Citadel that way, I just thought, how difficult could this be, and realized that no, if they resolve Bolas's Citadel, they just win, they often just win the match on the spot, because they have so many ways to you know, manipulate the top of their deck. I was very impressed, and when I seen Collective Company, I was like, finally we have a Collective Company deck that's not Spirits. And yeah, I think the deck did well when it had the element of surprise. I think the deck's strong the same way that, you know, Jund Sacrifice was good in Standard. I think if you have any relevant Exile Wraths, then the deck kind of just folds to it. It also folds to Wilderness Reclamation, but it's a very hard deck to, you know, it has the creature plan, but the creature plan is very hard to interact with. So again, I think it's very strong. Is it tier one? It's one of those decks where I think, kind of similar to Naya Winota, maybe slightly better than that, where I think it will hover around the tier 1.5, sometimes tier one list. But I'm really happy that it's a deck. I'm happy about that. Again, if they had
it's a new archetype.
Exactly. Again, if they had a Jund Triome, amazing. I feel like the Mayhem Devil is sometimes a little bit taxing on the mana. But yeah, for the most part, I like the archetype. I like having that style of archetype in the format. It keeps your sideboarding honest, and yeah, I've been impressed with it.
Is this like the new combo deck?
No,
because once they get that Bola Citadel down, like you said, they can just go off and win the game.
I wouldn't say, for me, like the way I view combo decks is, you know, a fast way to win the match. It's the same way that in like, you know, Approach and Second Sun could be called a combo deck, whereas I think it's they have potential draws where they can cast Citadel on turn 3, I think, which is obviously a very scary, you know, prospect. However, that often doesn't happen. You normally have some form of interaction for it. It's the new Aristocrat deck, for sure. I know people were trying to play.
I've been saying Aristocrats is going to happen for like 6 months. I finally got it right.
Well, the was.
You never thought it would have cannons.
No, I didn't. No.
But I'm pretty sure. Abzan, when the companions weren't nerfed, Abzan made a really strong resurgence. Abzan Rally, that was a really powerful deck. Ross Merriam was on it, and Michael Bonda was on it as well. So it's not the first time we've seen Aristocrats in Pioneer. It's definitely the go to Aristocrats deck now, and I think it's very strong. But I would still place it in the Naya Winota levels of power level, where I think it could arguably be called tier 1, but I think it's probably closer to tier 1.5.
So are there any other decks that we really need to know about that we need to be ready for in Pioneer this season? I think we talked about most of the new decks that we didn't really know existed. I saw that there's, like in these articles, I saw that there's different variants of the Auras deck now. Some people are trying out red white, some people are trying out green white. I never thought they were that good when I played against them, to be honest. But yeah, is there anything else?
Not that I can think of. I mean, potentially the Sultai control deck that I'm working on. I think most for the most part, other than the archetypes we discussed, most of the format's quite similar. Like you still have your burn deck, your Boros aggro deck. You still have like occasional Boros Auras deck, which still try to run Lurrus. Sultai Delirium is kind of taking a step back. I don't think Delirium is where you want to be because you just lose to five color Niv. But I'm currently working on a Sultai control deck, which is running Growth Spirals. Still running Sultai, still obviously running four Uro. I'm trying out Hydro Crisis and Nissa with one copy of Ugin in the deck. Also trying out two copies of Narset main with one copy of Commit to Memory. I was trying Silengar's Command for a while as well. That card was really good against mono green, like to counter a Planeswalker and kill the other one. The reason why I've Ekeros, MTG and myself have tried to work on it is because we figured out that the mana base was good. We figured that the deck has the top end we want, but also the early interaction as well. The Thoughtseize, Fatal Push Plan, Satyr Wave. We're now playing two to. I think he's playing four copies. I'm playing three copies of Satyr Wayfinder, just because it's one of the best ways to turbo Uro out of your deck. I'm also running two copies of Jace Wielder of Mysteries because I found that often in the mid-range matchups, one of the main reasons why you lose the matchup is because you deck out, especially in the Uro slugfests, and when you're playing cards like Hydroid Crisis, you end up sifting through so much of your deck before you can really start to gain control. This is especially the case against Niv-Mizzet. I've now started to play two copies of Jace, where I can take advantage of the fact that there will be cases where it's a race to deck out, and it's almost trying to get my opponents by surprise. And just, I think I managed to deck. I won by decking against my Esper Yorion opponent because I played Jace. I think I had Jace mill me, play an Uro, then play a Satyr Wayfinder, and then mill myself, so I had zero cards in my deck, and then played another Uro and won the game that way. So yeah, I like the Sultai colors right now because it has the basically just has the best card in the format, which I think is Uro plus the best interaction, which is Thoughtseize and Fatal Push. I'm also playing Casualties of War on the sideboard. I think Casualties is actually very good. From what we discussed with the people are trying to play Wilderness Reclamation, Fires of Invention, trying to play Planeswalkers and Creatures, with mono green as well. They play artifacts. So being able to ramp mana and cast Casualties of War is actually very good in this format as well. So
Who'd have thought that would be playable in Pioneer?
it's
I
hilarious.
guess I kind of saw some Niv-Mizzet play in the past, right?
Pardon?
I think maybe it saw some Niv-Mizzet play in the past, right? The Casualties of
I
War.
think a lot of the decks were playing one to two copies of the side in the sideboard even just now. Yeah, I mean the card's obviously expensive, but I think that given that you ramp up so much with between Growth Spiral and Uro, you can afford to have a card that's maybe one mana too many for normal strategies. And being able to kill a Teferi plus Niv plus one of the five color lands or kill a
It's
Planeswalker.
a 3 or 1 usually.
Three, yeah, but in a lot of matchups it ends up being a 4-for-1. So I quite like the card. And also having access to one copy of Ugin has been very good. It just, yeah. So I like this strategy right now. My only concern about it is maybe it's a little too slow for the format, or maybe I get stretched too wide, where there's just some decks that are just too good at going over the top. I also got to play. I played one copy of Narset's Reversal on the sideboard, and against five color Niv, my opponent Rakdos returned to me for five. So I just cast Narset Reversal in response, so put it back to their hand and discarded their entire hand. and then I won the game. So that was fun. I'm not playing Narset Reversal on the sideboard now, but it was for like Niv-Mizzet and Wilderness Reclamation matchups. So yeah, I'm hoping I've somehow managed to break the format and play this Sultai control strategy and win a challenge with it, but it will probably be another tier 1.5 tier 2 deck, but it's definitely fun to play as well.
So before we wrap up today's show, there's one more topic I wanted to go over, and you know, we've been talking a little bit about sideboards and stuff like that. So how should we prepare for the rest of this season and for like maybe the early season, maybe next month? What kind of cards should people be playing in their sideboards? It sounds like, you know, with all the Jund Sacrifice and like the Rakdos Lurrus decks, you're definitely still going to want graveyard hate, like Leyline. Calatis sounds really good right now, but what other cards do you think people should be playing in their sideboards?
Narset's Reversal.
Yeah. What does that do again?
So it copies an instant or sorcery, returns it to its owner's hand. You can choose new targets for the copy for double blue. So basically, it's kind of like expansion, except it isn't mana dependent, and it bounces the initial spell to its owner's hand.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
Yeah.
I mean, you'll always, just for future reference, you'll always have to explain blue cards to me because I don't play them at all.
Oh, you and I would not get along then. I love blue cards so much. Just basic Highlands, Detect 5, always and forever. To be honest, if we're talking about the new cards, I have no idea because there's so many sweet cards coming out. I'm really excited about.
Well, let's not talk about the new cards. Let's just kind of focus on this season. Like, what cards do you think should be in people's sideboards?
Aethergust.
Yeah, so Graveyard Hate is something I'm hearing. What do we want for Graveyard Hate?
Well, it depends what you're running. I think a lot of decks will have some sort of graveyard interaction. I honestly think the best, so if you have access to green, it's kind of more difficult, but I like Soul Guide Lantern a lot. I feel like the opportunity cost with that card is very low. I don't run any in my current deck, although I really would like to find space for either like Soul Guide Lantern or Scavenging Ooze. I think graveyard interaction is not rest in peace because most of the decks in the format will run some sort of interaction with the graveyard, unless you're mono green. So if I was playing mono green, yeah, but you have the current sideboard, so you have access to Soul Guide Lantern, so that's what you'll play our Torvald's Crypt, I believe. So yeah, I think as always, you definitely want some form of graveyard interaction, especially if you're not utilizing your graveyard. Aethergust is a more prominent card seen play now that didn't really see play before the bans. So I'm definitely running two copies of Aethergust, and I never ran it in Inverter because there was just no viable. All the green decks would just die to the combo before they could even, you know, win the match.
It seems like there's a lot more enchantments to worry about now in the metagame. You know, we had like the Fires decks and Reclamation. So what's some of like the good enchantment removal that you think people should have in their sideboards?
Well, and I know the black decks are running the Farika's Libation. Yeah, so I've seen people run that, which I think is good because up until, well, when the new set comes out, people have very limited access to enchantment removal, especially if you're in black-red. So I think that's a good card to run. It's kind of tough because for the most part I've been running blue-black, you know, blue-green X decks. Just trying to Elder Gargaroth is another card that I think if you have access to green, you should be running. If not in your main, definitely one or two copies in your sideboard. I generally think Casualties of War is more viable now than it ever has been in Pioneer. Noxious Grasp as well.
So here's a question. I've seen some of the decks like the Jund Sacrifice deck running a full set of Thoughtseize in their sideboard. Is that something that you think there are matchups where you're like, oh, you need to have discard or it's going to be a hard time?
I guess I can see Fosse's, especially in that deck, because you have such clunky win conditions in like Collected Company and Old Citadel, so that, if your opponent's playing counter spells, then I can definitely see that deck, especially why they'd want to run Thoughtseize. They probably have some cards that are very irrelevant in the control matchups. I think Thoughtseize is very good because, like we just discussed, there's a lot of decks that have key components that allow them to win the game, like Fires and Wilderness Reclamation. So being able to disrupt that is a very, a useful thing to be doing. So yeah, I definitely understand why Thoughtseize, if it's not played in the main deck, with aggro strategies won't always necessarily play that kind of card in their deck, especially if their turn one plays are predominantly ruled by what mana dorks they have in their hand. So yeah, I definitely see reasons to play Thoughtseize in the sideboard, with given how powerful certain cards are in this format.
All right. Was there anything else you wanted to add? I mean, I kind of wanted to talk a little bit about like the new pecking order, like what decks, are going to be top, but we kind of did this, or we already kind of talked about that throughout this discussion, saying this is going to be tier 1 or tier 1.5. So I think that's pretty much all that I wanted to ask you about the metagame today. What about you, Kevin?
No, that sounds good to me. Yeah, I'm with you there.
I was going to ask you guys one thing. Sorry, you probably might dedicate a full episode to this, and I wouldn't be surprised. But if I could ask each of you, what is the one card, given the spoiler so far, that you're very excited about, and why?
Oh, see, I was actually going to ask you this because we usually have a full episode on our spoilers. I don't know if you'd be along for that, so I had wanted to ask you that. Give me a second, and I'll look through what's happened so far. If there's any that I'm like really, really high on.
Sure, sounds good.
What about you, Ryan? Have you been looking?
Yeah, I've been looking here and there. I mean, I like some of the hate cards that they have coming up. I guess funnily enough, I don't know if that's the right word I want to use. That blue card that bounces lands that are when there's more than one land that comes in per turn.
Confounding
I thought that
conundrum.
was really interesting. Even though I hate blue, I think that's a cool card.
Yeah, I definitely agree. It reminds me of Spreading Seas in some way. Like that kind of, I love that they're all two mana draw card, so that it's almost, it gives it that cycling aspect of, if this card is irrelevant, hey, you're still going to draw a card. So it's never, if you want to put one in your main 60, it's never going to be completely dead. I really love that. I really love when they make hate cards that are low opportunity cost. So, and yeah, I just miss. I love the fact that they're printing relatively decent answers instead of ridiculously powerful threats.
I mean, it keeps it fair.
Right?
I think it's definitely a fair card. It keeps those decks honest. It keeps those ramp decks honest.
Yeah.
So like you're not getting extra land from Uro each turn. You're not getting extra land from Growth Spiral each turn. And speaking of land hate stuff, that new red card is really nice. The two
Yeah.
mana sorcery, destroy target land, and they get to search for a basic land to put into play, and you draw a card.
Yeah.
That's really nice. I'm so happy for land hate.
Me too. Me too.
And I think it's any land, so like even if it's like a basic land that my field of land can't hit, if it's a 3/3 creature because of Nissa, I can still kill it.
Yeah, exactly. No, I'm definitely looking forward to having that card, especially in standard. It's going to be interesting.
I feel like I haven't decided mine yet, but mine's definitely one of the white cards. I like some of the hate, like the Archon that we got, the like 2/3
Archon
flying
of Amelia.
that stops people from playing. Yeah, their basic lands enter tapped, and they can't play more than one spell per
Yeah, it
turn.
reminds me of
What?
Thalia, Heretic Cathar or something like that.
Yeah, Talia,
Yeah, I
Heretic
remember when
Cathar.
people brought that in from the sideboard, and I think it was the, was that around during, yeah, it would have been the blue white flash era, because it came out in Eldritch Moon. So it was like,
Yeah, so it was around the time of
yeah,
Spellcaller,
so it was like
yeah.
green black delirium. And yeah, I remember when people would bring that in for the sideboard matches, and if you couldn't answer it the turn it resolved, it was a nightmare.
Yeah, you know, I've been thinking about how much Talia would do against something like Niv-Mizzet.
Oh.
It'd be nice to put them down, you know, a couple turns by doing
Yeah,
that.
that's some space right there, actually. I might think about that. Yeah, for me, I think it has to be Seagate Stormcaller. Oof. I have big
Really?
plans
Okay.
for that. Yeah, I mean, like, I just have these dreams of just playing blue black and make blue black amazing, you know. The prospect of being able to cast Thoughtseize turn three after I've just resolved that, and I get to double Thoughtseize my opponent or double Fatal Push or double opt. I mean, the
What
kick.
does it do?
So it's a 3/1. It's like Snapcaster Body, right? It has kicker 5. When Seagate Stormcaller enters the battlefield, copy the next instant or sorcery spell with converted mana cost 2 or less you cast this turn when you cast it. If Seagate Stormcaller was kicked, copy that spell twice instead. You may choose new targets for those copies. So yeah, so basically, if you cast it turn 3, you play Seagate Stormcaller, and if you cast Thoughtseize, you get to double Thoughtseize if the Thoughtseize resolved. I think it's even if it doesn't resolve, you still get to cast one of the Thoughtseizes.
So the kicker lets you do it three times.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean the kicker's not the important
Yeah,
part, really.
the kicker is like the bonus, which means like, you know, if you have in hand like during the mid game to late game, you're probably just waiting for any one mana spell that's relevant, and then you're just, you know, you're
You can
laughing.
opt three
Opt
times.
3 times, even opt twice. Oh, it's going to be so good. I'm excited. I definitely think it's going to be. I think Pioneer might even be the sweet spot for this card, in terms of.
Ooh, maybe you can do the there's the new one that draws for each copy in the graveyard, the new accumulated knowledge.
Yeah, Frantic Inventory. Yeah,
Frantic
yeah,
Search?
yeah.
Yeah, I'm just trying to think of draw spells that are two or less, because you don't really want to be running this next dig through time. I mean, maybe you do, but
Yeah, I mean, there's lots of sweet cards, and I'm looking forward to the, you know, your episode when you have like your evaluation of the spoilers. Yeah, I'm very much excited for this set.
so we're definitely going to have you on after the set releases to kind of give us like a fresh take on the new meta, and maybe at that point you can kind of tell us a little bit more about what cards you were excited about and what ones you are kind of think had a lot of potential and stuff like that. So we'll save that for next time.
Sounds good.
All right.
Going to wrap us up, Kevin?
Yeah, let me wrap us up. So, guys, if you like this episode, if you want to hear more of our content, if you just want to bother us, tell us how cool we are, anything like that, go ahead and reach out to us. We love hearing from you. We've got a Discord channel. It's on linked on our Twitter or on other ways to reach us. And our Twitter, you can reach me at MTG Pioneer. Wait, is it Pioneer MTG?
And at MTG
What?
Pioneer, yeah.
At MTG Pioneer, that's right.
Yeah, and you guys can find me on Twitter at Yoshwenky, YoschwenKy. And Martin, how about you?
Everyone, you can find me on Twitter at mporter13. I think. Yeah, I'm sure it is.
I hope so.
I hope so as well. You can also just search for Martin Porter on Twitter. I will be posting regular updates on what I'm playing in the format, along with my 75s as and when I finish leagues with them. And I will hopefully be able to keep everyone up to date on everything related to Pioneer.
You can also say hi to him anytime you're playing on MTGO and you happen to run into him in a competitive Pioneer League. Just give a little shout out and say, "Hey, I heard you guys on the First Pioneers podcast."
Terry 13. Yeah.
And please don't mistake me for Harry MTG. Had that many a time.
I mean, it's not like that wouldn't be a
No, I mean,
compliment, but
Harry MTG is great, but it's became a meme now that people will message me on MTGO chat and say, "Hey, big fan of the podcast." And I'm like, "It's not my podcast." So yeah. And thank you guys again for having me on. It's always great having these discussions. I feel like we get such a good insight into the format, and you know, I love talking Pioneer, so I'm always happy to do this.
All right. Well, thanks a lot one more time. And we are the First Pioneers Podcast. We are your go-to source for pioneer information online.